This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us as we continue. It is hour number three. Still buzzing yesterday about the LIV Golf Tour and what happened yesterday. We were asked Dan Lust earlier today, who won this battle? Did it feel like anytime there's a merger, everybody likes to think this is mutual, this is great, everybody, it's fantastic. But in the end, is there a winner and a loser? And in this case, the question is, who won, who lost? And in this situation, it feels like the PGA Tour has backtracked enough to make you think like they lost. Their players aren't all in on it. It is a situation that has caused a lot of anger and feelings of betrayal. And you can't blame them. You can't blame them. There was a tour that stood on a soapbox talking about Saudi money, talking about Saudi money in relation to 9/11, talking about players being disloyal to a tour that made them millionaires. And they got players to back that. Rory McIlroy was willing to go out there every single week for a period of time to talk about this in a way that supported the tour, but ran the risk of ruining some friendships because he was so outspoken against a breakaway tour. He did it more than Tiger. He did it more than anybody, more than Jordan Spieth, more than Justin Thomas. Rory McIlroy carried the flag for the PGA Tour. He carried the flag for the European Tour. And what did he get out of this? There were offers, rumors that Rory would have made $300 million on LIV. Now, I don't know if that's true. People throw those numbers around at all. But you'd think he would have made more than Phil. Phil got $200 million as a 51-year-old guy, again, coming off a major championship. But Rory was the heart and soul of golf around the world. If LIV could have gotten Rory, look out. And Rory stood his ground. So Rory McIlroy had a press conference in Canada as they're getting ready for the Canadian Open. Here's Rory. It's about a minute long, but here's Rory on finding out about the merger and how it was explained to him.
I got a text message on Monday night, I guess, from Jimmy Dunn saying, hey, can I give you a call in the morning? So I said, sure. Jimmy rang me at about 6:30 yesterday morning. We had a chat. Took me through the news, took me through the deal, the structure of the deal, what it meant for us, what it meant for the DP World Tour. I learned about it pretty much at the same time everyone else did. It was a surprise. I knew there had been discussions going on in the background. I knew that lines of communication had been opened up. I obviously didn't expect it to happen as quickly as it did. But I really think that, you know, from what I gathered, the tour felt they were in a real position of strength coming off the back of the DP World winning their legal case in London. It sort of weakened the other side's position. And, you know, they went in there and, you know, the way Jimmy described it, you know, Rory, sometimes you got too itty over water and you just got to go for it.
All right, so Rory doesn't sound too angry about all this.
It doesn't sound too angry, but he also, it's like it's still processing.
Yeah, right.
That was what I was gathering from it, is that it's, you know, that the wheels are still turning inside his head. Like, you know, I'm trying to make sense of all this. Like, I just, what did I do for this last year? And like he said, I mean, he said he heard rumors, there was inklings going on in the background, which is probably why a large part was, you know, we saw him kind of pull away from the discussion for the last, you know, month or two.
Right, exactly.
You know, so, maybe he had gotten wind of this and was like, okay, you know.
I think that might have been something Jack Nicklaus was talking to. Remember the big story of Jack Nicklaus saying we need to talk? That may have been like, hey man, I may be 85, but I still got an ear to the ground on this, and this is what I'm thinking is happening. But again, here's my biggest thing with this. If the PGA Tour is going to come back and sell these guys on, you know, it's just a really good opportunity, the money, et cetera, then the morality card should have never been played, right? where the money comes from, who's attached to the money, what does that money actually mean to people like 9/11 families. That card should have – that's where Jay Monahan screwed up. That's where he screwed up. That's why his communications department should have said, listen, boss, I'm going to tell you right now, you go down that road, there's no turning back. When you stand on a morality point, you better make sure it's solid, because it's not solid here. You can be angry that the guys are forming their own league. You can be angry that they're wanting to take some of the best players off of your plate. You can be angry at those things. But if you are pitting yourself as the good guys and them as the bad guys, you better look in a crystal ball to make sure you never get in business with the bad guys. Now, in the end, Jay Monahan could go, look, I did it for the tour, and if it means my life is forever, I'm a hypocrite, you can't take my word for anything, I botched this whole thing. But in the end, the PGA Tour is the most powerful, one of the most powerful sports entities on the globe. Okay. Maybe he goes, I'll die on that sword. But why were these guys mad at Liv in the first place? It had nothing to do with forming their own thing. It had everything to do with who was funding it. Here's Rory again saying, well, he still hates Liv.
I still hate Liv. Like, I hate Liv. Like, I hope it goes away, and I would fully expect that it does. And I think that's where the distinction here is. This is the PGA Tour, the DP World Tour, and the PIF. Very different from Liv. All I've tried to do is protect what the PGA Tour is and what the PGA Tour stands for, and I think it will continue to do that. So, look, going forward, I hope that there may be a team element, and you're going to see maybe me, maybe whoever else play in some sort of team golf, but I don't think it'll look anything like Liv has looked, and I think that's a good thing.
Hold on. He wasn't mad because they played 54 holes of golf. He wasn't mad because they played rock music. He wasn't mad because they got to wear shorts. He wasn't mad because they played a reduced schedule. He wasn't mad at the concept of what Liv was doing. He was against this from the very beginning, before they even struck a ball. Stop it. He was mad because of what it was, what kind of money was coming into golf, and it was disrupting what golf was becoming. He wasn't mad at the format or team play. Like, I said this in hour one. Look, when you create something different, you have to be different, right? Like, when you're actually competing against something. Like, I always bring up
XFL.
Right.
For example, I mean, you know, there's a lot of similarities, obviously, but there's a lot of differences because they're trying to stand themselves apart.
You have to stand out, right? Because if you offer the same thing, but it's less, there's no reason for people. You got to say, like, look, when I was in minor league basketball, we had all sorts of quirky rules. We did things a little differently. We had a trapezoid lane, for example, like international play. One league I was in, if you created a turnover in the backcourt, there was an extra point that was added to whatever bucket you scored. So if you got a steal in the backcourt and hit a three, it was 4 points. If you got a layup, it was three. It was a little complicated for the statisticians, but it was trying to be something different. They were trying to do something different because that's what you have to do. You can't sell the same exact thing and expect people, if you are a different entity. Why it works in minor league baseball, for example, is those teams are attached to larger teams. But if you're trying to be a separate thing, especially if you think you're on the same level, I go to the USFL first edition in the early 80s. They really tried to compete with the NFL. A lot of these things aren't trying to compete with the larger entity, but Liv was. So what Liv was doing was saying, look, we have to do things completely different. We have to do team golf. We have to do 54-hole shotgun starts. We'll let our guys wear some shorts. We'll play rock music. We'll have a good time. It'll be a party. You come, you drink, you have a good time. You watch some of the best players in the world play some golf in more of a energetic atmosphere than these country clubs that are around the country. And that's what we're going to do. Because you have to be something different. And Rory wasn't mad about that. Rory didn't like the fact that Saudi money was getting into the game. But now I guess it's fine because, again, I think Jay Monahan is trying to sell these guys. We were broke. I don't think you understand how broke we were. We were broke. COVID killed us. Killed us. We're still paying out this stuff during COVID. We're still trying to run tournaments with nobody participating. Right? We had no sponsors, no fans. We weren't generating revenue on these locations. And a lot of times we were subsidizing these tournaments to actually exist in the first place, because the, you know, that's one of the reasons why, for example, a PGA Tour golfer can go to an event and get like a Segway or like a trip with his family to an amusement park, because it's not PGA Tour run. It's more locally run by the entity that's trying to put on the event. They're getting the backing from the PGA Tour, and the PGA Tour was subsidizing a lot of these tour stops to fulfill a media contract. So they dumped in a lot of money that they had. Their coffers were bare. And I think Jay Monahan said, I don't know where I can get this. And I think Brandon Chamblee had the best point. And I think it's accurate, even though he said, I don't know if any of these are legit, but that's what his thought was. I absolutely see a plan where the PGA Tour went to sponsors and they told him, cool it with the Saudi money thing, because we're 30% Saudi owned. Cool it with the Saudi thing, because we're 40% Saudi, whatever it is. And I'm sure Jay Monahan was like, okay, I know, but we need you to sponsor us. Like, yeah, and if you keep bashing the entity that's funding half of what we do, we're going to pull out our sponsorship. So there's probably a lot to that. We'll continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sports Map Radio, NBA Finals, and then Ryan Ballingy is going to join us at the bottom of the hour to get his perspective on the big, big news from yesterday. We'll continue. It's Wake Up Call.
You're listening to Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
By the way, you know, this Saudi Arabia money to PGA Tour, as I said earlier, it could give them, it's going to give them at least a seat at the board, on a seat at the table of the board. It could give them more as more investments. And, you know, because they, like you mentioned one time before, they may, you know, they may not be able to land Lionel Messi. He might be going to Miami, so they might have put their money somewhere. Yeah. There you go. Hey, how about that?
No, Lionel Messi is, right now he's looking at either going to Barcelona or Miami or a combination of both. After reportedly they were going to throw $800 million at him. Yeah, 800, just a tad bit under $1 billion.
That is so cool. Like, that is so neat. That even though these guys are doing it later in their career, that they would even entertain playing in the MLS.
Yeah.
When, like, 20 years ago, that was a laughable concept.
Like, it well, was I mean, big, it's, like, it's still, ha-ha. I think it's looked upon as, you know, hey, I could still go and be competitive. I'm just, it's not with the top players in the world.
20 years ago, they wouldn't have done it. Like you can David say you want to play, but there would have been other venues. But yeah, because when I was with the Rapids, I remember asking their director of communications on the show. I did pregame and postgame, and I said, "Do me a favor. Hypothetically, let's say David Beckham wanted to join the MLS," and it was laughable. We kind of had a giggle about it. But I said, "Tell me how that would work. Like, who would get him? Could he just sign with anybody? Would the league have to go, hey, you can't, like, the powerful cities can't just get the stars because the stars want to live there. Would there be a lottery if he wanted to? Like, how would you guys go about doing that if a major star wanted to play in the MLS?" And he kind of said, he kind of didn't really have an answer because he didn't like, oh, we'll see if that. And then a few years later, it did. Like, a few years later, David Beckham was coming to the United States. Remember they did that whole, they had that whole commercial? You say goodbye, I say hello. And he showed him lacing up his.
Yep.
Lacing up his shoe, hello, hello, and he ran out on the pitch. Welcome, David Beckham. Like then it became like within 4 or 5 years after that conversation I had, it became a reality.
Yeah,
and now it's cool.
And now you have a lot of these aging retired players who come here because they can live out a few glory. I mean, yeah. When Messi comes here, if he's to start come here next year, essentially 1 year, a little over 1 year removed from winning the World Cup. He's going to probably be the best player in the league.
Yeah, exactly.
Even though he's older than most of the kids he's playing against. He may not have that much stamina, but his skill level is unmatched.
I told you last fall that this is one of the reasons I love sports. And I think there's nothing equal to it. There's nothing equal to it. There's no politician, there's no thing that outside of sports that can unify the people more than sports. And I said to you last fall that when the whole globe is watching one thing and Lionel Messi is lining up a penalty kick and the only thing on television is him and he's got the ball and playing and he's then you go, this guy, everybody on the planet is watching this one person. Like there's nothing else. Like that's it. This image of only him on your TV, he's the only one. That's it. This is the one thing, and it draws you in like nothing else. I mean, again, you could have a great politician, but there's always going to be an opposite side that's going to be like, you know, this is a waste of time, whatever. But sports, even if you're rooting against him, even if you're rooting for him to miss, he's still captivated the globe in that moment. So if he plays for Miami, you're right. A year later. Or so.
Yeah.
It's like unbelievable. It's amazing. So, all right, game three of the NBA Finals tonight. I'm really looking forward to see what the storyline is at the end of the evening when it's all said and done. Who won and what it means. As I said in
the
first segment of the show.
Was it a close game? Was it a blowout?
Right. Do the Nuggets go, all right, you know what, back to work. We got lazy. And they win by double digits? And then we realize, oh, okay, maybe just maybe this is – a team that is controlling this series, meaning when they're on, they win, and when they're off, they allow a team to win. But if Miami wins, then all of a sudden we've got a conversation of, you know what? They did find something. They are finding something defensively, or they're finding their own rhythm. Any latest information on that we've seen on Twitter or anything on the Tyler Hero situation? Have they made a decision on his status? I haven't seen anything. So I haven't seen any news on Tyler Hero. Now, they've been projecting that he could be coming back tonight. I said, be careful. You get these smoke screens. This is how sports works, where you get an injured athlete and you say, oh, he's coming back. Oh, not really. Oh, maybe. I don't know. And then the other team is just prepping for that. So don't be surprised if he doesn't play, and don't be surprised if he plays for a couple of minutes. But I think I haven't seen any stories yet if he's in or out. I think he's out. I don't think he's coming back that early. So if I find something on Twitter or on the news wire, I'll let you know. But it doesn't look like he is. And we talked about this yesterday. If you're the Heat, you don't want to say you don't want Tyler Hero, but it seems to be going just fine without him.
Yeah, you don't want to. Yeah, that's you know what I mean? Weird fine line, right? I mean, I guess maybe if you get blown out here, you want him back.
Yeah, if you lose tonight and you go, look, we're going to need another weapon.
But a close loss, I don't know.
No, it's. I think you got to be careful because he could I mean, this is a guy that averages over 20 points a game. He's going to take up some offense,
yeah.
And that could be a positive thing.
Now,
but also with coming off a hand injury, what if he's like what if he's John Starks in Game 7 in 1994? He's just clanging everything off the rim and like, hey, stop shooting because you're killing us here.
I mean, and will he be on limited minutes? He's got to be, right?
Yeah,
if he plays tonight. You know, he's got to be coming off the bench, limited minutes. But I don't know. I mean, does that hurt the team? Or if he gets hot, do you, like, all of a sudden it's like, well, we got to play him a little bit more. He's shooting.
I think I think he's out for tonight's game. So I'll double check. But I think he's out for tonight's game. But it doesn't mean they're not playing around with it a little bit. But I do think that there is this sort of feeling like, we've had two games, and what exactly do we have in these two games? Like, what is it that we have? Do we need more from Miami to believe that they are a team that is right there with Denver? Like, if they're on, they'll win. Because what we got out of game two wasn't that. We got a Miami Heat team that won, but there was a lot of Mike Malone yelling, Mike Malone begging his team to play with an intensity, a fourth quarter just collapse. They don't play good defensively in the fourth. They didn't have a sense of urgency that they probably should have when they were up 8 points going into the quarter. I mean, Denver blew a 15-point lead that they had in the second. They blew an 8-point lead with 12 minutes to go to the start of the fourth. Mike Malone was upset. Now, if you change that, then does Denver then just win? Like, and like we talked to Nate Kreckman at Altitude Sports yesterday, if you shoot 50% from the three-point line, you're supposed to win games. If you're knocking down 17 three-pointers, you're very likely going to win the game. If you're shooting over 50% from the floor and 48% from threes, you're probably going to win. But they only won by three. And every negative thing that was pointed to the Nuggets still was just a three-point loss. So tonight, if Miami wins by eight, then you go, all right, they found a rhythm. They found confidence. By the way, and don't forget this, if the Miami Heat win this, and I know we're three steps ahead here, if the Miami Heat win this, they will have pulled off the greatest championship run of any team in professional sports. Any team. I don't care. Give me an eight seed that has won a championship, and they still didn't have to do what this Miami Heat team did. Because Miami still had to play an extra two games to get into this thing. When I said, it was funny, I actually made a mistake because I said that during the playoffs, Miami only faced elimination once, and that was Game 7 against the Celtics. They actually faced elimination in the second play-in game when they played the Chicago Bulls. We kind of forgot about that because the play-in game was like, yeah, let's just, these are the bottom feeders, wink, wink. These are the teams that are going to need a little extra help, except for the Lakers, right? The Lakers were the ones that were like, yeah, they got to go through the play-in tournament, but man, they're playing really good right now. But everyone else was like, yeah, it's a short-lived party, but at least you're in. At least you got an invite. You may have to serve some drinks, but at least you're in the room. And the Miami Heat had to play two games in that, losing to Atlanta, playing Chicago, beating Chicago, and then the rest of their run. I mean, in baseball, you get in. No one tells a team they have to do extra things outside of the normal way the playoffs are structured. Hockey doesn't do that. Football doesn't do that. You have to play a wild card round or something like that, but they didn't go, oh, you know what? It's still not good enough. You still have to do something extra special. The Miami Heat had to do two things that were out of the ordinary of other teams in the they didn't. You know what the play-in tournament is? It's so funny. They don't even say you earned a playoff berth when you get into the play-in tournament. They don't even categorize it that way. They say you earned a right to get a playoff berth by playing in the play-in tournament. So they are three wins away from pulling off the greatest championship run of anybody. Hard series, took down the number one seed, took down the number two seed, and if they beat Denver, they will have taken down the number one seed in the West, all coming from an 9-8 play-in tournament game against the Bulls. All right, Ryan Ballingy from Golf News Net coming up next to talk more about the PGA Tour and the LIV Tour.
This is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, let's go back to our Progressive guest line. Progressive Insurance, looking for a career you'll love with flexibility, great pay and benefits, and one of the country's top workplaces? Come join our growing team. Go to progressive.com/careers and apply online today. Ryan Ballingy, our good friend, joins us from Golf News Net because, my goodness, was that a big breaking news yesterday. Little over 24 hours when we saw it, and it's really shaken up the golf world. Ryan, how are you? Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me on. I'm still flabbergasted by all of this.
Did you see any of this coming? And even in a small way, did you see a potential merger? Because boy, the vitriol was so thick you could pour it on pancakes.
Yeah, I mean, I think there was only one end game to this, which was some way of piecemealing all of this back together. Did I see it happening like this? I definitely didn't see it exactly happening like this. But you could kind of tell that LIV was a poor product and not doing well, and that the lawsuit was not great for either side. And ultimately, those two things, probably plus some other stuff, comes together and leads to the belief that this is a loss mitigation merger, that everybody was kind of losing. So the best way for everyone to lose a little bit less and maybe gain in the long haul was to come together.
Did you hear about the PGA Tour? Were they in some economic trouble? There was reports that they spent a lot of money that they didn't have on during COVID. They've raised the profile, the money that they were looking down the road and like needing an infusion of cash. Do you buy that's one of the reasons they did this?
Yeah, I can buy that. I mean, lawyers aren't cheap, for one. This lawsuit was going to go on for a long, long, long time. This wasn't going to end this year. That was going to be a minimum 2025 thing. And those billable hours with the high-priced lawyers that they had on staff for this lawsuit rack up incredibly quickly. And that's just the legal side of it. Then you have to go to your sponsors, and you're asking eight figures more per year from many of them to become designated event sponsors. You're losing some sponsors because they don't want to be relegated to second-class status as regular events. You've got the difficulty of trying to navigate your political stance against the Saudis, which I think is well-placed, but you can only have so many people that can sponsor because there are a lot of people that do business with Saudi Arabia. So you put yourself into this position where you've backed yourself into a corner, and you're spending money that you don't really want to spend, but that they kind of have. And ultimately, I think Monahan came around to the view that he could, if he negotiated a deal with the public investment fund, have a better sense of control, although I don't think that's really true, of how that money that the Saudis want to spend gets spent.
What I don't understand is, here you have Jay Monahan. And listen, if this was 5 years down the road, if we've had lived for 5 years, I could see him saying, you know, circumstances have changed and we've done this or this and we kind of need to partner up with it. I would say, you know what? I get it. Your big stances against Saudi money, your morality play, I get it. But he's the commissioner. He should be seeing 2 or 3 years down the road. A year later, we're partnering up? This thing just started a year ago. The talk's longer, but they actually started playing a year ago. How come he couldn't see a year from now we would probably need this?
This was an absolute failure by Jay Monahan. I mean, from top to bottom, start to finish, a total failure. And he then fails along every step of the chess match where he gets heavy-handed. He doesn't think about the length of the lawsuit that they're now embroiled in. He doesn't think about what the ask of money is going to look like to sponsors to keep up with Saudi money that is effectively limitless.
Yeah.
And he didn't see any of those things and along the way didn't think, you know what, maybe if we're going to take on private investment, we could do it with investment that's based in this country. Ari Emanuel said, what, a couple weeks ago, last week on a podcast, that he himself, Endeavor, who owns UFC and now WWE, would be willing to invest $1 billion in LIV before the Saudis were going to do it. The Saudis might not ever have gotten involved if Jay Monahan had seen around the corner enough and gamed it out enough to know the Saudis weren't going to go away. And instead he played a dumb game of chicken where he had very little leverage and, frankly, no concept of what was coming his way.
The wealth fund, the PIF, was it their intention all along, or at least the way you see it? So I might be asking your opinion on it. Did you sense that they really didn't want to run a golf league? They just really wanted to have a seat at the board on the PGA Tour and fund it?
LIV was a means to an end. I'm very much convinced of that. LIV is a tactic, as far as I'm concerned. LIV as a commercial product was and has been made fun of relentlessly. The ratings are terrible. People don't want to watch sports on the CW. No offense to the CW, but people don't want to watch sports on the CW. And that all still created an intense amount of pressure on the PGA Tour because of what became by LIV existing, which meant they brought players in, they created an antitrust problem, they created a legal problem that was massive in nature, they created an economic problem. And then they just let it play out. And, they played it well. The Saudis played it about as well as you could have played this, and they got exactly what they wanted, which was really, as you mentioned, to be invested in men's professional golf. And they got that in a year's worth of work for the amount of money that they own, a drop in the bucket.
Yep. Phil Mickelson, he took the arrows for this. He had to stay away from the Masters because of this. He's now been vindicated 1,000 times. What's Phil's image today?
That's a great question. And I don't know how history will smooth or roughen the edges of all of this for him. Obviously, he wants to paint himself as a visionary and someone who was right all along. I think he made the right gamble. He got paid, and now he seemingly will be welcomed back to the PGA Tour with open arms, and he can walk away from golf whenever the heck he feels like it with an incredible amount of money. He won. I don't know. Live golf as a concept, I do not think won, but the Saudis did. Phil did. Some of the other players who took the money did. How they will be viewed by history 10, 20, 50 years from now, obviously we have no idea. And there's a lot of things that can still happen in the next week, 3 months, 6 months, 12 months, 10 years that could really change how we view how all of this happened. But at least in the short term, Phil won, and it looks like in some ways he was right.
I'm glad you said that because I agree with you. I'm now seeing it. Like, it's easy to say Mickelson, but let's say 10 years from now, if the Saudis keep pumping money to this and in return they get more seats at the table and now they're dictating, they have more influence on how the PGA Tour is run or the global tours are being run, and it's not great, he could be seen as the guy that ushered this all in.
Right. If the product doesn't get better, or there are fewer people who choose to watch golf because of this, which is, by the way, a very realistic possibility.
Very true.
No one wanted to watch LIV, and they had a fairly good number of well-known, decent golfers, and no one was watching that thing. So is that because it was a new league? Is that because of the source of the money? I don't know, but I think we'll start to get some of a picture of that this weekend, because will people watch the Canadian Open knowing that the Saudis are all of a sudden very strongly invested in the PGA Tour? Will that drive people away?
If I'm a tour golfer and I had $100 million on the table and I turned it down because of everything Jay Monahan said and felt like there was a loyalty and I didn't want to lose a PGA Tour card if LIV went under, I could be rich, but I didn't get into this to get rich. I got in it to play competitive golf at the highest level. So I backed Jay Monahan. How much anger can sometimes be, there could be no justification for it. You just get angry. But are they rightfully angry here and could be rightfully angry for a while at the way this played out for them?
I think they should be angry. I think they should be livid. I personally don't see how Jay Monahan survives this that long. Ultimately, he may become so toxic that he has to go, even though he architected this.
Yeah.
But he has installed himself as the CEO, effectively, of men's professional golf, because he is the CEO of this entity moving forward. So he's basically self-preserved himself in this move. Meanwhile, you've got, like you mentioned, players like Rory and Tiger and Ricky Fowler. I think about Will Zalatoris, who is on the shelf right now with a back injury that may dramatically alter the course of his career. And he had reportedly a nine-figure offer on the table from LIV. Had he taken that and still been in this predicament with his back, his life would be secure. Now it's not.
Ryan, great stuff as always, my friend. Thanks for always being on call for us, my man. I know it's busy for you guys at Golf News Net, and I really appreciate it as always, my man.
Thanks, Tony. Appreciate it.
Ryan Ballinger, Golf News Net. Go to the site for more on the LIV and the PGA Tour coming together. We'll continue. It's Wake Up Call, Sports Map Radio.
With Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
Man, that last part of that Ryan Ballinger interview, that's the one that hits home, right?
Yeah.
Right. Will Zalatoris. He mentioned Will Zalatoris, who has been in competition for majors. He's been right there at the end. He lost to Justin Thomas in a playoff at the PGA last year, had been in contention at the Masters, had been in contention at the U.S. Open with Matt Fitzpatrick last year at Brookline. This was an up-and-coming star, a great ball striker, young guy. He gets offered $100 million to play on the LIV Tour, turns it down, and now he's got back injuries that has kept him out of the game, and he's had to withdraw from tournaments. And with back injuries, you never know if a guy ever comes back. And he's in. And you and I were talking off the air. Golf is filled with stories of guys who had a moment in the sun, maybe a couple of moments in the sun, but an injury here or there, or they lost their game, or they lost their confidence, and we never hear from them again. And we look on the leaderboard one day, and we're like, wow, oh yeah, remember that guy? He was actually pretty good. And now he's in Q school again, or he's on the Corn Ferry Tour, or he's playing in a Monday qualifier to see if he can get into a tournament. Your time in golf isn't guaranteed. There's no guaranteed contracts. You're an independent contractor in a way. Like, if you're a golfer that you sign a deal with Callaway, right? They get you you're 23. You just finished second at the U.S. Open. Callaway signs you to a deal. You'll get that deal. But after a while, if you're hurt and not playing or missing cuts, that deal goes away. And then all of a sudden, some of the sponsors go away, and now you're under a lot of pressure. Liv was going to go, here's $100 million. Here you go. We send it in. We put it in. You get so much today, so much tomorrow, but you're going to get this money, and it sets you up forever. I think that Jay Monahan, as he mentioned earlier, the thing that bothered me, there was the morality play. I still am blown away that he went to that card and he couldn't see 10 feet down the road from the house. Like, again, if it was 5 years later and he had to make this merger, I'd say, all right, that 5 years to process the ins and outs of the business.
And who knows what would have happened in 5 years.
Right, exactly.
You know, I mean, a lot of stuff could have happened. I mean, like you've been saying it all along, you know, they've been losing money. They didn't survive COVID. And, you know, they've been bleeding money ever since. You know, 5 years' time, maybe it's even more bleak than it is now, and there is no real alternative. And, yeah, you know, people are screaming for him, like, hey, you got it. You got to do this deal. You got to make it happen.
But but 11 months later, 12 months later?
It's literally what yesterday they were saying. It was almost to the day he made those comments at the RBC Canadian Open.
Uh-huh. Exactly. That's not foresight. That's not looking down the road. That's not anticipating. Like when you run a company, you can't just be like, well, what will today bring? I have no idea. I don't know what tomorrow will bring. We could close the doors tomorrow. We could expand. You're always like, hey, projections are this. And when the projections change, we'll deal with it. But this, this, and this. He knew a lawsuit was coming a year ago. He knew he was going to be in a long legal fight. He knew that he didn't want to pay that much for lawyers. He didn't want to open the books, all of those things. But the other thing, too, is, again, what he said to those players, what he said to Phil and Dustin Johnson and Patrick Reed and those guys, like, you will never play on the PGA Tour again. You are banned for life. You will never play. If this thing folds, you have no home here. So that scared a lot of young golfers who would say, as I was saying earlier, a lot of times people have to get out of this idea that money is the solution to everything. Money isn't the solution to everything. It certainly solves a lot of problems, but it's not the main motivator, right? If you ask a young kid who is playing college golf right now and has PGA Tour potential, and then you say to him, I'll give you $100 million right now if you never play again, they'd say, no, I've worked too hard. My goal isn't money. Money will come. I want to win the Masters. I want to win the U.S. Open. I want to play on the tour. I want to make a living. I want my day-to-day life to be waking up and being a competitive golfer, not living on a beach drinking pina coladas because I don't know what I'm going to do tomorrow. Am I supposed to do that every day for the rest of my life? Every day? My goal is I want to get up and practice, and I want to play, and I want to travel to these events, and I want to compete. And I want to test my game against the best players in the world. And Jay Monahan said, yeah, and guess what? If you go take the money at Liv, you'll never, ever do it here. Which means that if you're 23 and you're a young Colin Morikawa, let's say, and they're offering you nine figures because you've won a couple of majors, and you go, look, what if this folded and I can't be a competitive golfer at 25, 26? I'm not 52 like Phil. I don't have a plan with my wife when all our kids are done with college. We'll just travel the world and live in all sorts of different countries for the rest of our lives. I'm 22. I'm 23. I worked my tail off for this. My parents took me to every tournament in the country. Like, I spend hours and hours practicing so I can play against the best in the world in the top level tournaments of the world. And he's going to take that away from me if I join Liv for this money. I want money. Don't get me wrong. I want to be rich. But I also want to play on the highest level. So I'm going to roll the dice with this thing. And then they merge up with the Live Tour. It's like he said, it's a failure. It's a complete and utter failure. Now, sometimes you can be the failure if it leads to greater things. Meaning, I handled this wrong. I made a complete mess of this. I owe everybody an apology. But you know what? You'll. I cannot be excused for how I handled this, but down the road it'll be best for everybody. Okay, I can live with that. Some people can live with that. But the idea that he didn't see this coming, like he could not, all he had to do was just tone down the rhetoric, man. That's all he had to do. All he had to do was say, yeah, they're going to do their thing, but I still think we have the best players in the world and we're going to increase purses. He didn't have to mention the 9/11 families. He didn't have to ban people for life. He didn't have to do that stuff. Because if he was smart, he could have said, you know, I'm going to keep my mouth shut because we're probably going to merge with them at some point. We're going to need their money. We're going to need their capital. And I'm just going to play the whole stand, wave my flag.
Was it a bully tactic back then?
Yes. I agree. That's a great way to put that. Complete bully tactic.
It was definitely a bully tactic towards the players, saying if you're leaving, that's it. You can't be in this. You can't be in that. You can't just totally exile, and you're never going to be allowed to come back. And now, I mean, that we all knew was a bully tactic, but you know, maybe even taking it to the press, he's trying to bully the Live Tour and just say, hey, get out of here.
And there was a guy like Harold Varner III who said, all right, look, I don't have a couple of majors under my belt. I don't have like what Justin Thomas may have or Jordan Spieth may have. I want generational wealth. I've got kids. They're going to have kids. My grandkids are going to have kids, and I want them to all have a stepping stone to a successful life. I want the nine-figure payday that grows and grows and grows every year, and if we invest right, no descendant of mine is ever going to have to struggle financially ever again. You had guys like that, but you also had guys like Dustin Johnson that was like, listen, man, I've won an Open. I've won a Masters. I always get to go to Augusta. I'll be competitive enough to be in these majors. I want the payday and I want the ease of schedule. I don't want to be on the road 30 weeks out of the year. I like this. I'm doing this. I got plenty of money. I got some majors under my belt. But for the guys that had an opportunity that weren't sure where their career was going, that's where I think he should be like, yeah, I get it. I get why you're mad at me. I threatened you with losing something you worked your tail off for, and I made it seem like you were going to be greedy if you took that money and immoral if you took that money, and I painted you people out as those who made that decision as doing it for the wrong reasons, not the right reasons, and then a year later I'm doing it for the same reason I told you was immoral. That's ridiculous. That's ridiculous. But I did like what Ryan Ballinger said. We'll see about Phil in a couple of years. Like, again, if the Saudis are running the whole thing and all of a sudden the PGA Tour just doesn't feel like the PGA Tour anymore. If Jim Nance and who's in his booth now? I forget. Who's the guy that's in his booth? It's not Nick Faldo. It's somebody else. I think it's Trevor Endelman.
Yeah, Trevor. Yeah.
If they're like, hello, friends. Welcome to Riyadh as we get ready for the Saudi Arabian Open again. Like if they're there like 13 weeks out of the year. Yeah, then you can look at Phil Mickelson and go, yeah, thanks for everything, Phil. Thanks for seeing things 15 steps ahead. Yeah, you could see, and you never know. It could happen. They're going to be buying more and more influence with that money. That's what billions gets you. Like, people don't just give it away. They're like, oh, you need some money? Yeah, okay. Yeah, here's the deal. I want three more seats on your board. Three? Yeah. That's what's going to cost. Okay. Next thing you know, you look around the table and it's like, oh God, the whole crew from PIF is running this show. You never know. You never know. But
that's how it's going to happen.
It is. What about Greg Norman? I forgot to ask him about Greg Norman. Is he just left out on an island and all this? Like,
no,
thanks, Greg,
remember,
for your services.
I told you yesterday, I think Greg Norman's sitting back like Thanos at this point.
Yeah, but he's not running anything.
No, he's not.
Now, he's not, like, he ran Live. He's not running Live anymore. Like, but he did what he wanted to do 30 years ago. He shaped this tour in a different direction. My goodness.
Fantastic.
All right, we'll see you tomorrow as we go over Game 3. Enjoy that game tonight as Lombardi Line is coming up next on Sportsmap Radio.